The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hi, this is Greg Weissman, creator of Gargoyles and Reign of the Ghosts, and you're listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Tony.
Hey, I'm Doug.
And since Hex isn't here, howl noise.
This is a Nerdy Show presentation of Lightning Dogs.
Lightning Dogs.
Lightning Dogs is an accidental concept that we created where you take all the most awesome things about late 80s and early 90s action figures and toy lines and make this ultimate version of them. It came to us when we were talking about some dark times that dramatic television animation had a couple years ago.
R.I.P. Young Justice.
Yeah. And Hex played us a track that was a cover of the Thundercats theme called Lightning Dogs.
But that wasn't enough, because Brian Clevenger got confused.
I was confused, too.
We were all pretty confused about it.
We were all a little confused, and in that confusion, our collective subconscious put together the Lightning Dogs.
Yeah, no relation to their distant ancestors, the Thundercats.
distant ancestors.
Yeah. That's not ancestors.
They're second cousins four times removed.
Not even that.
Just because we don't talk about them at Thanksgiving dinner.
Their thunder sparked the lightning, and this is...
Oh, I like it.
I'm in the room. You don't have to do this on my behalf anymore.
This is what Lightning Dogs is all about, Tony. This is what Lightning Dogs is all about. So we went on this tirade during the episode and created a whole world for Lightning Dogs that was so popular that fans demanded that we go back and do it again, and we did it again, and did it again, did it again, and this is the sixth Lightning Dogs episode.
Wow.
Have we really done six of these?
Yeah, as of now.
It doesn't feel like it, in a good way.
This is going to be a two-part Lightning Dog extravaganza, much like
so
the last
much
time
lightning
we
dogs.
Returned to the Wasteland.
I thought I was going to go home, I was going to see my wife.
Nope.
No.
Lightning Dogs writer's room.
Lightning Dogs.
Yeah. It's important, man. It's super important. She'll understand. What this has basically been is, imagine, if you will, this hypothetical animated series or whatever it is being brainstormed from its genesis, from its first accidental moment alive. All of Lightning Dogs as a concept has been happening live during these shows.
On the mic.
Yeah, very, very little has happened off the mic.
It's a rare occasion where you get to see the behind the scenes before you get to see the scenes.
It's true. The fact that you can literally hear the moment where, dare we say, we caught lightning in a bottle. Like, it's the moment where we suddenly said, wait a minute, this is a great idea. The moment where we would really started to grow into something beyond.
I'm pretty sure most times we even say, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Did you just say, wait, ooh.
Yeah. I love to go back to listen to that because you can hear the excitement in the air. It's pretty cool.
It crackled, if you will.
The reason we're here actually doing, you know, six episodes of this is not just because we were excited about it, but also because you guys were excited about it.
People gave cash money
for
episodes dedicated to Lightning Dogs.
The fan response, we know that this is something special. So obviously we're going to keep working on it. That said, this is the last Lightning Dogs episode as we know it. Because what's happened here is I've just spent, I don't know, 5 minutes explaining to you what Lightning Dogs is.
Yeah.
That means that this concept has now reached the point where us doing these episodes, explaining these conceptual world-building things where you'll have to have listened to six episodes prior to really get the full gist of all these characters, we know that's not inclusive. And we know that, you know, for the general populace, that's not necessarily
fun.
Yeah, good radio. I mean, hopefully you'll be listening to this if you're a first time listener and think, man, that sounds great. But
let me go listen to the previous five episodes.
Right, and please do that. You should. LightningDogs.com. But
that's right. We got the domain name. What?
And don't be afraid to keep listening to this because there's really no spoilers because
spoilers, yes.
Because it's all spoilers. We're coming up with this stuff live.
Yeah, yeah.
But what we're going to do is we're going to transmute the Lightning Dogs format. And you're still going to be getting this behind the scenes stuff, just in a different way. But we'll worry about that later on. We'll talk about the future all in due time, because right now we got to get back to the world of the Wasteland.
Yeah, yeah.
And talk about our very own warriors of that Wasteland.
Everybody all kibbled up?
Kibbled up.
Yeah, I'm well satiated. Thank you.
Because I got a water bowl in case anybody needs to
I'm
map
begging
out.
To get
great.
Started.
You're great, grand. Okay, super. Let's go. Over these two episodes, we're going to talk about further establishing the world of the Wasteland, further establishing the conflict and the villains of the Lightning Dogs, and, well...
particularly Halloween Jack and Glampire.
Yeah, in this episode specifically. And then we'll see where we go. So last time, we finalized the roster of the main heroes and, for the most part, their powers.
Mm-hmm.
In short, because you may be a first-time listener, the Lightning Dogs are a group of anthropomorphic dogs who come from another world, but they're returning home. Their home is the planet Earth, a very long time in the future from now. And they were once lab animals, but
they were pets. You could be pets or lab animals from the colony.
An interdimensional experiment, essentially.
Yeah.
And then were left there mysteriously by their masters, only to evolve into a race of dog people who then took those artifacts and found their way back home, only to find it a complete wasteland filled with mutants. No humans to be seen.
Except for David Bowie.
Except for a creature who calls himself the Glampire and his minions.
Who may or may not be David Bowie.
He's not David Bowie, he's Glampire.
You can keep saying that, Cap. I'm going to continue to believe that he is, in fact, David Bowie.
He may be highly referential to a certain famous pop artist, but that's another thing that we'll get more
Glampire,
into.
Glampire's beyond. He's from somewhere beyond. He's something. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm describing David Bowie too. I don't know.
I'm just. I know we haven't addressed this directly, but does he have a minion named Major Tom?
Actually, I did speculate that would be the name tag on Space Boy.
I am okay with that. So,
Space Boy also being a David Bowie reference.
And
okay.
It's just it's like origami, man. Folding all together.
Right.
But it's more than just that.
It
we've
is.
Also got a whole rogues gallery of mutants
of rogues.
And crazy
and
animals.
Creatures and a strange world.
And turtles with crap on their back.
And swords for hands.
And does he have swords for hands? Did Captain Scrap have swords for hands?
He may or may not have a sword for a hand.
In the first drawing of Captain Scrap that I did, he had one of his arms was like a nub with a rapier blade, essentially a rusty, crusty rapier blade.
I do not remember that, and that is amazing.
Because we're designing these creatures and these characters to be the most extreme action figures of all time. We want, you know, classic era Ninja Turtle Playmates detail action figures.
Flint sparks on these action figures.
Can we get a Captain Scrap that you wind up putting in the bathtub and he kicks his little feet along so you can move?
That'll
on.
Be the much maligned, not quite so high quality wind up, wacky wind up.
That's going to be
Lightning Dogs.
When we get into like the sixth season and network's restrictions are making us be more kid friendly.
Very well.
We're going to have those bath toys.
I think to get on point, what we need to discuss is the origins of
the origins
of
the
Glampire.
Yeah.
Do we want to run through our roster of heroes briefly just so that people know who we're talking about?
Yeah, maybe as a refresher course for everybody.
Yeah, let's do that so we know what they're up against.
All right. The leader of our intrepid heroes is Dingo, who is a dingo. He is strong, true, has a badass scar over one eye, and has a superpower. Gets to bark with enough sonic force to tear off flesh.
Maybe, or at least repel them with a sonic blast.
Repel them,
Thunderbark, right?
Yes. The Thunderbark. Yeah. The Thunderbark. We then have Angela Bassett Hound.
Whose name is not Angela.
We just call them by their names, just their first name.
It was
name
a funny
really
joke
kind of,
that I did one time, and she is a Bassett Hound.
She is a Bassett Hound.
But we'll keep the rest of it quiet.
That's perfectly fine. So Angela, the second in command to Dingo, who has more experience than Dingo, whose special power, she's essentially a tank. She can
gets super strength and durability.
Yep, can just shrug off anything that hits her. We then have Pierre, our French poodle slash mechanic slash all-around renaissance dog.
Slash badass.
With a giant poodle afro.
He's lean, he's lithe, and he's super fast.
Super fast, like lightning quick, if you will. And that rounds out our military heroes. Along with these military heroes are those who have joined them on this trek to discover what happened to their homeworld, including but not limited to Dr. Kane Corso, who's a dick.
He's the untrustworthy person of the group.
He's Dr. Smith.
Yeah, from Lost in Space. So he's the anthropologist there. He's familiar with the culture of the masters.
The master expert.
He is also a Cane Corso. It's worth mentioning.
Which is an Italian breed of dog. And
he's got super duper hearing to the point where
he gains Yeah, he gains the ability to hear most things that the other dogs cannot.
From either be it conversations from miles away or say different frequencies.
Yes.
Like radio frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of frequencies, Narissa, our mechanic and resident badass.
A Wemreiner.
Wemreiner, yep. Yeah. She is sweet, spunky, and can see the entire spectrum. She gets supervision, just because she babysits the youngest member of our group. Mm-hmm. Get it? Supervision? moving along. That's right, bitches. You
keep moving, Tony. Don't sit on that for too long.
That's right, bitches. I'm back. Get it, bitches? Because yes, they're female dogs. Yes, all right, moving on to our next female dog, Kid, the youngest, who is a mutt. We're not entirely certain what she is, where she comes from, but she is an amalgamism of everything that happened in the 90s.
She is also the expert, I believe it was Hex or Cap that said best, was the John Connor surrogate.
Absolutely. She's
the troubled teen who is a tech expert.
Yeah, she was arrested because she was a hacker, and mm-hmm. now the military is saying, like, yeah, you want to be free, you know, well, you work for us. Program, you know?
Yeah, yep. Because she was really good at hacking the master.
Yeah, master subsystems. Because this is a world where their world, the technology that the masters left behind is one of the pillars of their entire civilization. And people who figured out how to manipulate it and work it have helped expand the dog people as a race far beyond, like, far speedier than man. Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. Like, they've built themselves off of the technology we left behind.
Standing on the shoulders of giants. And her power, she's actually our eponymous lightning dog. She generates a electrostatic charge that she can use to either, because she, as a hacker and tech expert, she will, like, construct little batteries/electric grenades that...
Could recharge a crystal, I think.
Recharge a crystal, or could create an electromagnetic pulse.
I like her being like the lightning dog. I did, however, come up with a problem with that.
Oh,
a couple of them, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
One is that we can fudge this. It's a cartoon, after all. But maybe her having these static electricity powers would be a problem, since she deals with computers and she just breaks the stuff that she's supposed to be good at using.
Rubber gloves.
Well, they're fingerless gloves, Tony.
finger pads.
And also,
well, she could control it, was what I'd imagine, but continue. Yes,
she was conceived as the penultimate 90s character. Would she not be too much like Static Shock?
I don't think she's going to be too much like it, and I think that, if anything, it's going to come across as an homage, because she's part of an ensemble, ultimately.
I mean, she's not going to be flying on a manhole cover.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know much about Static Shock, but I know that he flies, usually, and she's not going to fly.
Of course, we're trying to fly.
We've joked before that she would have popped off the screen of Comic Zone, but it's different enough. We don't have to literally.
And let's be fair, there's a ton of characters out there that have electric powers that originated in the 90s that wear trench coats. It's not unique to Static.
Not even counting video game characters as of late.
And then moving along with our roster, they've got their pet. Yeah, and I use the pet term pet loosely.
The obligatory four-legged animal character, but this one, unlike Snarf, is not Goofy. Beast Hound.
Who I use the term like a tank a lot, but this one, he's like a tank. He's large, he's very hard to hurt, and he shoots lasers out of his eyes.
Which is something we...
He's a wild feral dog that was on Earth when they arrived on Earth. No relation, really, is that they were on a separate planet, they evolved to speak... This one evolved on Earth to be
survive.
The ultimate dog.
It's not like in Gargoyles where you're like, where exactly does Bronx come from? Is he just a retarded gargoyle?
Oh, why does Pluto not talk and Goofy does? Right. I don't understand.
Yeah, what is Goofy and Pluto, the whole thing? Yeah.
So it's not like that. He is actually a differently evolved dog from a completely different world.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it okay. With Beast Hound, you know, we've been joking about the laser eyes since day one.
Yeah.
Last time we talked about this, we actually hadn't decided whether or not that was what we wanted to do with him. And I was re-listening to the episodes, and there was actually an earlier power that was proposed, which is that he can sense danger, which would incur a bunch of Lassie jokes for the audience. But
I think he would only... I think he would only sense danger like a normal dog would. I don't anticipate, like, his superpower is danger sense.
We can still have Lassie jokes even without it being superpowered Lassie.
If his superpower is danger sense, then the most natural outcome for him should be the big cowardly dog that, like, hides under the covers. But no, but since he's such a badass, I'm like, how can you take a badass dog that would be the ultimate guard dog in the future in a post-apocalyptic wasteland and make him an even more of a badass?
Laser
vision. Yeah.
I'm personally okay with the laser eyes. I just wanted to readdress that because there had been some discussion about whether or not it didn't fit in line with the rest of the power set.
I think giving him the laser vision is okay, because even though it doesn't fit as much into the power set of the other characters, I think it works because he is the odd one out.
There's also something to be said for the fact that while, yes, we do want some congruence, one of the big things about Lightning Dogs is that we are building a world where everything makes sense. Beast Hound doesn't need to. Mm-hmm. Beast Hound is just the big, stupid, campy, fun
thing. I also think, well, he's not stupid, but I think that giving him laser vision makes him very dangerous, because laser vision is something that you'd normally give to someone who, like Superman. He's intelligent. He can control it. Beasthound, if you make him too angry, the lasers are coming out. Yeah, so, you know, it'll be...
There are ways that we can take it, but at the end of the day, I just like the idea, the campy, little silly idea of this giant dog with laser eyes. Yeah. There was one other character.
Wolfman. Oh, well, the Wolfman's the artificial intelligence
The lightning dogs. Yeah. He is an artificial intelligence originally created to be a DJ.
When humans were still around.
And he is the only... Is he the only DJ left around? Or should we have like a Ryan Seacrest somewhere?
Nah, I don't know. I think right now we should just say he's the only DJ left around. And if we're stuck in a slump on season 5, then...
then we can bring someone else in.
Be like, oh, it's like... You could be like a Buzz Lightyear schizophrenic, like, oh, the systems are...
Or even better, we could have a political pundit.
No, I was going to say, I was just like, Wolfman just... It's like he gets a glitch and suddenly he's like Howard Stern. Just bring Howard Stern to the booth. Like, let me tell you something, okay? Just like...
So this actually brings up a good point of discussion to start the episode with, which is the question of audience.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we making this show for? Now,
us.
I suppose...
Yeah.
You know, we could look at it as, oh, we legitimately want to turn it into an all-ages television show, and then hopefully not fulfill the prophecy of the episode that Lightning Dogs came from, find it, you know, canceled abruptly, Tron Legacy and Young Justice and... Korra.
Well, yeah,
Korra wasn't canceled.
It wasn't canceled. It was just kicked off television.
The answer might be on Netflix.
Yeah.
You know?
It could be. I mean, we're forging ahead. This is the future by the time that we're ready to do anything that high end with Lightning Dogs.
TV may not even exist anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It could all be on YouTube.
We'll decide the audience, and we won't have action figure sales or lack thereof dictating whether or not we'll be able to make a show.
But that being said, I think Cap said it best a while back when he said that we're going for a kind of Legend of Korra where it appeals to the children and adults. And, and even when you say children and adults, people think children who play with toys and adults who laugh at a joke every now and then, when we really mean the full spectrum, even the teenagers in between.
No, the tone, because this isn't so much audience, this is about tone, is something where it's a simple enough plot to where kids can understand.
Because
it's funny. Ultimately, Lightning Dogs is a comedy, except that it's not a comedy.
But ultimately, it's one of those where character relationships and dynamics can evolve in a way that challenges the status quo that is a little bit more thought-provoking. That's what Avatar hit. That's what Legend of Korra hit. Now, obviously, those were just beautiful, some of the best television that's been around in the past 14 years.
Mm-hmm. I would dare say we would compare it to Legend of Korra or the Harry Potter film series in the sense that it starts one way, but it matures
absolutely
as it goes along. And not because suddenly the tone of the show changes, but just that the characters start growing and becoming more complex.
Yep.
It starts off like this. Okay, you got six dogs on an alien planet, and they're kicking butt, and they're either running around.
It's like Road Rovers.
Yeah, and they're like driving around in these fancy
cars. Shut your whore
mouth. Shut it. You know, and look, that's kind of funny. They're making a couple dog jokes here and there. And they got a scary glampire guy chasing after them. But I think the longer the show goes on, the more complex the relationships between these characters get, where you become more deeply invested.
Yeah.
So by the time you get to the end of season 3, season 4, you're like getting choked up when someone may not make it, you know, or when...
Right.
And you haven't told me about this.
And also similar to Adventure Time, which is...
Yes.
It starts consistently lighthearted. It never loses its flavor, but it does get increasingly more complex.
We just don't want it to get stale. It's not going to repeat just to sell cereal, where it's like, oh, the new, you know, week they're doing this, and just over and over and over again.
Yeah, Pendleton Ward and crew perhaps do it best of anyone in that they create...
Them and Gravity Falls.
They created a show that... Gravity Falls... Alex Hirsch has this concept that's very insular, it's very creator-driven, but it's also confined. Gravity Falls is very confined. Adventure Time is boundless. And I think we're in a similar criteria with Adventure Time because we can do literally anything to the wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
Gravity Falls is confined to one weird town.
True enough.
We've got the world.
The entire planet. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I see where you're coming from with that analogy.
Or even a multiverse. We don't really know where the dog planet's from.
I was even going to say for when the show finally goes off the air and we're no longer in charge of it and they say, well, can we have an idea for another show to continue it? I'm like, well, you know, like when Power Rangers ended, they went Power Rangers in space. You know, they went Lightning Dogs in space. Lightning Dogs interdimensional troop, you know, and just have different teams, different
Stargate
characters.
Stargate Atlantis.
Yeah, no,
we have like the original Lightning Dogs pop in and look like a cameo.
All kidding aside, the universe is that big where you could do something like that. You could, in theory, do a whole, and I just thought of this, you could do a whole other show where you got Lightning Dogs over here doing their thing on Earth, and the second spinoff show is the dogs that are back on the dog planet who, after they lost contact with the lightning dogs, are like, let's go build a rescue team and go after them. But we can't use the Farfetch. Let's build a spaceship. And they start going across the universe trying to get to Earth and all the different voyages that they go on. Why not? Like, right. you have so much stuff to mess with.
Yeah. Dog Trek.
What it's kind of angling towards the Adventure Time is that those guys have created a show that's so inspired by tabletop role-playing and imagination and everything. Mm-hmm. That even with a show like Lightning Dogs, we can treat it the same way. It's easy for us to get hung up now that we've like established the core world and like really make it a hard sci-fi and be like, mm-hmm. Oh, that doesn't make sense. But no, it's always got to have that campiness, that goofiness.
You could go anywhere.
Yeah. It's a funky, weird show made out of funky, weird ideas. And
where the first priority is it cool? Does it make the little kid in me go, ooh, I want a toy of that?
Right. It's either got to make you laugh or go, oh my God, that's so ridiculously awesome. Or maybe even a little afraid if that's what the sell them that
and
way.
And we can always justify it later.
Right.
That's what 6 episodes have been. That has been us taking this concept right. That made us go, woo, and going, let's justify that, shall we?
So this episode, we're going to be focused on the stuff that hasn't gotten the attention. We're going to be talking about a lot of the backstory, a lot of the villains. We got to flesh out Glampire and his whole deal, his minions and so on, the world of the wasteland a little bit more, and also the world of the dog world, which I have been calling home. Earth is Earth, mm-hmm. So perhaps for dogs, their world would be called home.
Yeah, it's like, go home! Come on, dog. If you see a dog in the street, it's like, go home, buddy. Go home. You know, it's like, it's a very common
dog command.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are we okay with calling Earth EARF?
No.
Because it's kind of like ARF.
No.
Yeah.
They would call it Earth because that's what the Masters called it.
And they have all the Masters crap that they left behind.
Someone's going to have to call it Earth somewhere. I'm just saying, we'll have a Will Smith dog pop in a later season.
Welcome to Earth.
Welcome to Earth.
Welcome to Earth.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to Earth.
Okay, how about this?
See? And you're laughing? It's in. It's there somewhere.
Halloween Jack pops up for the first time, and Dingo's like, ah! And he punches him right in the mouth. And he's like, oh, welcome to Earth.
We should dive into origins of Glampire, how it ties into Halloween Jack. How does Halloween Jack become his minion?
So Glampire is a figure based heavily off of the various persona of David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to work with there. Obviously, we've borrowed pretty heavily from his song catalog for ideas.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little too heavily. We might be dialing that back to, mm-hmm. depending on how we feel.
And every time I try to draw the character, I always start with a crotch. So
you start from the crotch, work your way out.
Yeah, that's,
from there,
because that's what you. That's how
well,
you
that's,
have
that's
to work.
That's what we
with
got
Bowie.
First and foremost. That's the most solid part. It's not going to change. Everything else can change.
He's eccentric. He's otherworldly, and he's lethal and vampiric.
And he is an alien. He's not from Earth.
And the story we've kind of concocted for him so far as a little bit of a Man Who Fell to Earth vibe, except in this one, he's not someone who's looking for, say, I believe in Man Who Fell to Earth, it was water to save his desolate, waterless world. This is a creature who was ejected from his world because he
was bad.
Yeah, you know, maybe he was a revolutionary. He's very passionate about mm-hmm. returning home.
He's charismatic too.
Yeah.
Now, thought just occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a revolutionary, instead of somebody who was fighting against an established system, why not the ruler of this planet? Because Cap, you used
like
the word, you used the term ejected.
Yeah,
he's proven that he has leadership capabilities, because obviously he's the leader of these forces on Earth. He is the leader of this evil coalition.
Okay, I see where you're going, but just really quickly to say, can we think of any time in human history where a dictator was overthrown, successfully overthrown, and they let him live?
This is in human history.
I'm listening.
If we were to believe that Glampire was a bad man in outer space, I mean, he's definitely a bad man on Earth, but in outer space, if from his home planet, if he was a bad person,
right.
Then perhaps those who would overthrow him would let him live because what was overthrowing him was the antithesis
was the good
of Glampire.
Guys.
However, I don't really know. I don't really know how
well,
I feel.
But, well, how he got off of that planet, I don't think is as important as his situation once he lands on Earth. Now, if he was a bad guy, mm-hmm. no matter where he's from, if he had control over those minions that were kind of, like I said before, they were kind of Skrull-ish,
mm-hmm.
if Halloween Jack, let's just say, is kind of like that. Because I was looking back to the previous episodes, I'm thinking, man, one or the other, they both sound great. What should it be? Then I thought, is there a way we can merge it? So this is my pitch to merge both origin stories and still have it make sense.
Okay.
All right, kid, you got 30 seconds.
So the idea is the Glampire has kicked off his planet, mm-hmm. whether because he's a bad guy and he's been kicked off by other bad guys or whatever. Either way, he's kicked to Earth. he had an army of those minions mm-hmm. with him, but they're not going to just drop him off with his army because So they're going to say, okay, Glampire, we're throwing you the furthest planet away from our solar system as possible, and it can barely sustain life. It's just a barren thing with like ape-like creatures. You're going to be the only intelligent thing on there. Boom, we drop him there, and that's it. Their technology is way far behind. You're never going to catch up to us. That's it. Goodbye. Yeah, goodbye. The Glampire army, they get sent into basically the Phantom Zone or some mm-hmm. other planet where there's just nothing there. Like, it's a giant prison planet, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Sending them there using far-fetched technology.
Mm-hmm.
Glampire sits on Earth, waits, sees time go by, and it's terrible because he's so far above what us humans are capable
far-fetched,
of doing.
Far-fetched, by the way, is the name of the interdimensional, the warp system, yeah. interspatial.
Yeah. It's what the dogs call it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So he's stuck on Earth, and to his delightful surprise, he sees that humans are advancing really quickly to the point where they're going to build the warp gate technology similar to what brought him to Earth in the first place.
And then when they activate it, he brings them in. He yeah. brings his team back.
He brings his army back.
Which, you know, that could tie in with my pitch of him being the dictator of this planet, because if you were to remove this head of power, he wouldn't just be just himself. He'd have a cadre.
Yeah.
Of advisors.
Also, we hinted that human history very suddenly was interrupted. Like yep. they were doing very well
and then
exploring
gone.
Yeah, exploring the stars, and then something big and bad happened very suddenly.
And that would be oh, this is yeah. Yes, Doug. Yes.
I'm gonna let you because, you guys finish, by yeah. the way. I'm gonna let you finish.
Okay, yeah.
All right, Cap-Yay.
So what were we gonna say? Yeah.
What happened with the dogs? The dogs were the initial tests of this far-fetched technology, because it's not like they're immediately gonna perfect it, right? The dogs in this distant planet where the dogs wind up, that's the initial tests. That's, you know, moving to live testing. They send a dog, then they send a team, and they have discovered how this technology works, and that's when the Glampire strikes. That's when he yeah. uses the technology. That's when...
Once it's proven that it works, yeah.
As we've established in other episodes, the dogs rediscover this technology. You know, that's how they get to Earth.
Yeah.
What is Glampire's endgame? Because after he gets that, why doesn't he keep using it?
What do you mean? Why doesn't he just go back to his home planet?
Yeah.
Because humans fight back. They're not going to let him. They don't want him to do it. They, like, as soon as he starts showing up with...
But they lose.
Yeah.
So, after they lose...
Why doesn't he just hop through a gate and go?
You
could say that, much like the lightning dogs follow in their footsteps. The humans said, this is an endgame. We're going to shut down. Which is why the dogs were stranded in the first place. Mm-hmm. Humans say, we're calling everyone back. We're destroying each of these gates because we cannot afford to have this guy catch on and get away.
Then how does it reactivate?
One was left behind, deep underground in a bunker somewhere that Glampire just doesn't know about.
Okay, there we go.
Here's where I'm going to butt in.
Okay.
I think I have a good direction for this, but let's first talk about one of the core MacGuffin of Lightning Dogs, because that does tie into everything we're talking about right now, which is the crystals.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, we joked about, oh, there's crystals around. They use them to power their guns and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, Doug, I know for a fact you've got some thoughts yeah. on these crystals. This is one of the few things we talked about in between shows. And that is that the crystals are a naturally occurring resource on the Lightning Dog's homeworld.
Mm-hmm. That's why we originally go. Yeah.
But they're also the key ingredient for the far-fetched technology to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
They don't naturally occur on Earth. They do naturally occur on that world. Planet. Which is, and because they have mysterious properties, they're also one of the things that have led the dogs to evolve so quickly mm-hmm. before Earth as a wasteland has deteriorated completely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Glampire, meanwhile, is trying to manufacture those crystals mm-hmm. because they don't grow on Earth.
Yeah. You're like, why doesn't he just go back? Well, he's going to.
Yeah.
He's just biding his time.
He's got these crystalline spiders that we haven't fully explained yet that create the diamond dogs.
I already thought of a reason on how they work and why they're important, but continue.
And it takes hundreds of years. It takes hundreds of years for these crystals to grow. So, like, one of the inciting incidents
is
for
that the conflict, lightning dogs steal the crystals.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, Glampire's less interesting as a General Zod figure and more interesting as this Machiavellian influencer, because he's been on Earth for an extremely long time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's made a career out of manipulating humanity, probably longer than he was alive on his home planet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a pop star. He's been a wealthy entrepreneur, probably several times over. He's constantly reinventing himself because obviously he can't let humanity know that he's not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been a predatory vampiric creature lurking in the background, manipulating human culture.
Waiting for his time.
So it would only stand to reason that once we got to the point where we were capable of manufacturing these crystals, synthesizing the crystals, he would have been one of the chief people lending money into that project.
That's
he would
a
have
very good point, yes. Yeah.
Investing in this project. So what all of a sudden he's created is he's created a resource by which humanity can solve the energy crisis. Let's assume that that as much green energy as we can make now still isn't enough, and that the entire global economy needs this energy source, but it's commoditized. And then one country figures out a way to use the crystals to locate more crystals naturally occurring elsewhere. When they synthesize them based on Glampire's money being like, you know, you should really look into this. and
just saying, guys, one word, crystals.
Maybe you can use the crystals to find more crystals. So wouldn't that be funny? And they're like, oh, good idea, investor guy. Okay, cool. And they do.
Mr. Investor.
They do find more crystals. But what happens well beyond Glampire's control, and maybe even as a result of him getting so excited that he pushes the envelope too far and tries to stimulate this global economy of crystals and so on, essentially World War III breaks out, and it's a commodity war over these crystals. And destructive forces lay waste to the entire planet. I mean, like nuclear weapons we don't even know about yet.
Weapons using crystals.
Weapons using crystals.
That's a scary ass thought.
So,
based on what we already discussed for the crystals.
So naturally, the whole project gets shut down. And Glampire, all of a sudden, he's heading like peace rallies, trying to be like, no, 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 don't do this. Oh, my God. And
all we are saying is leave the crystals alone.
Basically,
just give them to me.
an ugly situation happens on Earth. It's his fault. And right. He didn't even want it to happen.
Yeah.
So where we have Glampire, he's an evil person. He's a manipulator. He is a vampire in every sense of the word. But his goals are continually tragically unrealized.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get to have an army. He assembles his army after he's like, well, fuck it. Humanity's gone. I can leave this charade. So all these creatures that have crawled out of the muck here, this is all I have left. Fine. Let's do
so
this.
So he's passive aggressive and bitter?
You know, I'll take all that humanity built, all that I helped them build, and I'm going to be the one who forges this. You know, I didn't see the point in being president of the United States. I was instead throwing money around, making it count, you know, influencing technology. But instead, here I am. I'm going to be king of the world, and I'm going to get home, and I'm going to take this army that I'm building from the ground up, maybe even with characters like Queen Lich, genetically from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finally in a position where I'm going to rule. He maybe hasn't had this inkling since back in like the early medieval times, maybe with when he rolled like the Huns or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
You know, like it's never felt quite like this again, where he's like, I have both all this technology and none of the society.
Just as a piggyback off that, because I still like the idea of him having this history of doing this on his home planet, and that's why he was getting out.
Right, because you were saying, oh, you don't want to do a General Zod. That's kind of what I was pitching, but I agree that it needed something. I think instead of General Zod, we need to think of him more, what if General Zod landed on Earth and became Dr. Doom?
Uh-huh.
So it's like, this is a man, for all intents and purposes, he pushed humanity forward with money, and then he could, what's not to say in the distant future, this guy is so rich, he buys his own country, and then it says, okay, we're doing this, we're researching the crystal technology, we're doing all this forward, and then shit happens. The one thing that I still got a question about in terms of him being like, heavily involved with humans and trying to make these deals and stuff is if humanity destroys itself, that's the big irony that it's just like, fuck no. Like he made this delicate plan but then humanity just destroyed itself. But the thing that I liked about the idea of humanity going into the stars and spreading out was that our sin was that we went too far.
Right.
And then we uncovered something like this cosmic evil that we weren't prepared to face. That was Glampire. But because we had spread ourselves too far, we just announced to the universe, hey, Earth is here. And then something like Glampire shows up and humanity goes, no, back off. Shut the fucking thing down because we don't know what else is out there. But it's too late. And so instead of humanity getting like angry at itself and bombing itself out of existence, it suddenly is this big war that if all of humanity is somehow united, that can be something that when the Lightning Dogs come back, they're like, oh my gosh, the Masters were doing so good. We need to fight Glampire. Whereas if they come back and Glampire is like, I didn't do it. They blew themselves up. It's like, oh man, then the Masters kind of suck.
You should definitely tell them that.
Yeah. So I'm torn. I'm torn on what the ultimate fate of humanity is.
It's one of those that one of these is more interesting. Ooh, I think it's a more interesting fate that humanity blew itself up.
I think that's the more poetic.
Because here's the thing. Them versus Glampire, the way the Cap described it, that's a far more interesting arc for Glampire, and it leads to some campy humor that we can throw in there where he's just like, no, 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 in that moment. Also, when the Lightning Dogs do get there, they're going to see this war. They're going to assume that they were fighting Glampire.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Glampire is going to sit there and tell them, no, they blew themselves up, you idiots. They're not going to trust him. He's the villain.
Right.
That's exactly what a villain would say.
The other thing was, we talked before about the Halloween abortions until we have a better name for them. I was going to call them the Freaks.
I have a good name for them. It's what? Another thing I stole from David Bowie.
Then what? What did it tell us?
It's another thing from Diamond Dogs, the album, which I completely forgot about. Peopleoids.
Oh, God. That's a good name. But here's, okay, so this could help, because I was trying to think of, like, what's the explanation for the peopleoids, these freaks, what's the fucking deal? Like, you know, like, they're so messed up, where do they come from? How come you can get Captain Scrap over here, but then you got Spider Guy, you know, with a weird freak face over here? Like, how does one make sense, and why does the other not? This, again, sort of was bouncing off the scroll idea that I had, where if he was bringing in another race of aliens, which I guess I have to backpedal and explain what that was, but I'll do that later. If he puts Halloween Jack in charge, he's like, Halloween Jack, you got to keep the troops in line. I got a system here. We're going to grow these crystals, and then we're going to make it back to my planet, and we're going to kick ass and rule the world.
What?
Now, if Halloween Jack's sort of job, then he becomes kind of like Saruman, where he's got to raise the army.
Okay.
He starts growing these freaks. Like, he starts getting some of the monsters that are running around the wasteland, combining them, hitting them with lasers in special ways, and you get these weird freaking monsters that don't really have a brain. They're kind of like cave trolls, you know, from like Lord of the Rings. They're just kind of like big monsters that can come in and wreck shit up. Okay. And you can get the spindly, spidery guys to be like the really quick, you know, jumping around guys that you can't really get a handle on. They're sort of
different enemy types.
Yeah, different enemy types, because you got the basic foot soldier like the Putty, right? Which could be like these alien creatures. Mm-hmm. Then when you need somebody who's the quick guy that even Pierre, the guy that Pierre's got to fight who's not really good, like the parkour expert, that's the spider guy. And then you got to get the big, giant, fat Cyclops coming in, who's the big, fat tank who is going to... It's like Hulk versus Hulkbuster armor with Angela, no, you know?
I'm picturing the fight, because obviously Pierre's going to be the mouth sitting there like, yeah, it's a lot easier to jump around. We got four fucking legs.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that was my idea on how to make all this match so that it's not just like these weird freaks. And also that played on the thing that Cap suggested when we were talking about these freaks for the first time, was that what if they're somehow native to the world and the Lightning Dogs stumble across a whole bunch of them? It's like, whoa, it's like a little hidden village of them where they're just naturally living there. They're not like militarized. Like, they're just living there, making little freak babies and stuff. And you get this weird thing where it's like, wait a minute, I thought these guys were our enemy. But it's like, no, they're being raised and captured and like forced to fight along with Glampire's minions. And I think that's kind of cool, because that once again is expanding this world. Like, it's not just, oh, you're either working for Glampire or you're working for the Lightning Dogs. It's like there's stuff that's in between that you'll never know all about.
Glampire and his whole minion setup, I mean, it's like any feudal situation. If you want power, if you want wealth, if you want security, you're going to roll with an army. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, everybody else is just dirt.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, whether or not there's any eugenics program going on during any of this, regardless, by the time the Lightning Dogs get there, there's an army.
There's freaks,
It's medieval warfare. It's, I mean, obviously Lightning Dogs is highly influenced by Mad Max. It's the fucking guy with the hockey mask, you know, and his crew just rolling up away on stuff. Yeah, just walk away.
To tie
Lord
back,
humongous,
just...
You're talking about?
Yeah, humongous, yeah.
The Ayatollah of rock and rolla, as they call him.
to tie back for a second with the humanity thing and what I was getting
at. Yes, yeah.
It's not only a more compelling story for the Glampire, it's a more compelling story for our heroes to then be confronted with the fact that their masters are flawed.
Well, that was why the bad masters were going to come in.
Well, yeah, but this could tie into that. This could tie into maybe, you know, because we were talking about that as a late game thing.
That's true, yeah.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's mid.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that helps them kind of realize that maybe there is a seed of truth to what Glampire has been saying about who they've been chasing.
Yeah.
We could even have, as a disc jockey, Wolfman Jack start sharing some news reports that he would have broadcast.
Yeah, I feel like that's starting to get a little dark, though. Nuclear apocalypse is always getting a little... So it's kind of a bummer.
We can gloss over it just as they ended, you know, they destroyed themselves. I think it's a more compelling story. It's a less
I totally see the validity of that and how that makes a good story arc, especially for the Lightning Dogs to discover that and then start questioning all that stuff. I just don't know if that's going to get too heavy too quickly.
It's also not something that we need to get into ever. We know it, and the people who are listening to this behind the scenes know it. But as far as the average public is concerned,
but they'll want to know. Like they're
eventually,
if,
yeah.
If they say, "Wait, they had the far-fetched technology. Well, what the hell happened?" Well, we don't really discuss that. Then it's like, well, what a bait and switch, you know? Like, we're making a lot of promises on, especially with Wolfman Jack. It's like, so Wolfman Jack, tell us, what do you remember about it? Oh, I don't know. You know, it's like, come on, dude, you were there. You know, like,
I mean, we've got an out for him. He's got a corrupted memory.
Yeah, that's
we've
true.
Also he's, it's yeah, something where we know it and it's something we can explore, but it's not going to be too dark too quick because we can get to that in good time. And until then, it's fun, it's campy, and as far as the rest of the world is concerned, I mean, wouldn't you accept the idea?
Well, how about this? Maybe this will fix things a little bit. So we talked about an alien invading race via Glampire. We talked about Glampire pushing humanity in the direction of getting the crystals and everything. Talked about maybe making the war happen because of an energy shortage, because the crystals are a perfect solution, but they're a limited solution.
Mm-hmm.
And that anyone who gets access to more crystals ultimately holds too much power. And that's very compelling, but maybe too challenging to express in the show.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's a cartoon too, you know? Like,
right. What if in the process of unlocking the far-fetched technology, they find something that they should not? It's not related to Glampire at all. He realizes just how dangerous what he's been doing is. But he is pushing them, and he was pushing them, and he was pushing them.
Yeah.
And it's his fault.
You wield it like a kid who's found his dad's gun.
Yeah.
To quote Jurassic Park.
So I don't know what it is, and will there be any signs of them left on Earth? But, like, you know, something happens, something that destroys.
There is absolutely a sign of them left on Earth. Space Boy. Why is Glampire so fucking terrified of Space Boy?
If Space Boy was like an astronaut they sent up to go through, you know,
he discovered it,
and he comes back, and he's Space Boy. He's no longer an astronaut, and he's a freak monster. Then all the humans are going, nope, that's it. Shut this whole thing down. It's gone bad. And Glampire's like, no, you can't shut this thing down. Just one slip up is not that big of a thing. But then, of course, Space Boy starts walking around on Earth, and holy shit, things go bad.
But doesn't that make Space Boy less scary if he's an ultimate destructor? We can't use him the way we designed him to be.
Right.
But that also depends on when we reveal the origin of Space Boy. Because again, if he is...
Well, the original idea was that Space Boy doesn't even have to show up until after the Lightning Dog show.
What if Space Boy is like Tall Man from Phantasm?
How do you mean?
You'd be like, because Tall Man, when you first introduced him, oh, it's like it's some kind of creepy like Crypt Keeper mess going on. Here's Robin Graves and stuff. Then you find out, nah, he's compressing cadavers into horrible midgets to work in high gravity areas, and he's actually helping pave the way for the colonization of Earth between interdimensional portals. I don't know how familiar you guys are with Phantasm.
I'm not very familiar.
It's one of the most brilliantly convoluted horror films of all time. It's one of my favorites. It's so good. So it's a way to take something that's like a very solitary kind of horror and also combine it with a global threat sci-fi, because Tall Man is an emissary in a lot of ways. It's just something far bigger. So Space Boy could be a part of
something larger and then something left behind.
Right. But also, I mean, the world needs to be ruined. Like, there needs to be a war, you know? It needs to be a transformative, destructive war. To continue,
yeah.
Lightning Dogs is based on a rich history of the nuclear apocalypse. The source material we were pulling from when we created it was pulling off of Mad Max and Fallout and, you know, and everything else of that ilk, of that nuclear...
Well,
I think one of the problems we're running into right now is these are all really good ideas.
Yeah, it's like trying to pick the,
do we
you
want,
know...
Then let's do this. Let's look at them instead of merits of the storytelling. What is the most fun? What is the most easy to understand? And what is the simplest? I mean, what do we want this story to be? Because like we've been saying, this is as big as we want it to be.
Right.
And we can make it big, clearly.
Right. I'm just thinking in terms of a big world-ending thing. It doesn't have to be a nuclear apocalypse. It could be a crystal apocalypse. Here's my thing with a nuclear apocalypse, like literally using nukes, is that it would destroy a lot of infrastructure the Lightning Dogs wouldn't be able to play around in. And it would, like, radiate a lot of stuff that you wouldn't be able to really walk around even after 1,000 years. But if this is some sort of crystallized weapon apocalypse, who's to say, we could change the rules to be whatever we want so that anything could be left behind?
As long as there's an opportunity for, you know, genes being scrambled.
But that's purely what we've already discussed the crystals can do, especially on the dog planet. They start evolving way faster. And if you drop a bomb of it on something, who knows what will happen?
What about having a nuclear reactor but crystals, and Glampire's intentionally trying to, like, it's his big show, it's like, check out this thing I've funded, it's free energy for the world, it's the biggest motherfucking crystal anybody's ever seen, I can't fucking wait to open up that portal, ha,
right,
ha, ha.
Right.
And then He turns it on, and it's not even supposed to open up a portal, but it just, like, rips a hole in space and time.
Because he went too fast with building the technology. He didn't have the technology to actually support it.
He didn't have the infrastructure. He just had the end result.
Much like Half-Life.
And what comes out of it is, we talked about Elder God stuff in the past.
But I don't think we need to leap right into that. If anything, that's like...
But let's say, like, we could either...
Just bad stuff.
Either humanity destroys itself fighting a war with a monster,
mm-hmm.
or it opens a portal, something terrifying is seen... They shut it down. They can't shut it down. It's gone too far, and it creates this disaster that maybe causes a chain reaction and similar things. Like, all of a sudden, like, every crystals were resonating with this energy, and it just implosions all over the world, depending on how mm-hmm. intense the network is. And the one thing that saves certain things being generated, anything underground, is it's all surface stuff. Anything that was set up with the infrastructure on the surface is blown to bits.
There's a lot of underground stuff still around.
Yeah, anything underground is still operational.
That could be something, because it's also a matter of using like a pure crystal, like a naturally growing crystal. The problem with Glampire is that he was too impatient and he used the artificially grown crystals, and he artificially grew something so big. It's like, well, the artificial one will be good enough. You know, it only needs to work once.
And maybe that's how he learned his lesson. Yeah, like, that's why he's waiting hundreds of years to do it now, because
this is going
to
seem a weird question. Why are we making Glampire so compelling a character? And the reason I ask, the reason I ask, if we're basing this off of the 80s and 90s cartoon shows that we all grew up on, that we all love, some of the most iconic villains, Mumm-Ra, the ever-living Skeletor, Megatron,
they're just bad.
None of these were very compelling characters, they were so iconic because they were just, they weren't so much a stereotype as they were an archetype.
Yeah, to be clear, I don't think we need to have any redemptive qualities to Glampire if he's just like, I just want to save my people. I just want to go home and do what's right. It's like, that's a little, you know, then it's suddenly like, well, shit, now who am I supposed to be rooting for? Like, all he, mm-hmm. if he, you know, he is trying
we
to kill the lightning
gray.
Dogs, but if he, you know, yeah, if he is a bad guy, I mean, and he is selfish.
The thing about Sinestro. Sinestro is a terrible person. Sinestro is fucking evil.
Right.
Sinestro thinks he's the hero of his own story.
Right.
We've compared Korra in Avatar The Last Airbender. Fire Lord Ozai is almost exactly what we've described. He rose to power in very Machiavellian ways because he's the second-born son of a royal family. So in order to get to the point where he could take a position of power, he had to poison his father against his brother and then poison his father to kill him. And he is...
I don't think we're making Glampire too relatable. I think ultimately he's an evil person.
I don't necessarily mean relatable. I just mean he's got a very rich backstory. He's got a very, very rich, because, I mean, we are coming up with a lot of
We're still
of
figuring it out.
We've got a lot of options. We've got a lot of options. And I say we err to the side of simple.
The thing that we liked about Glampire was the tone of his character,
mm-hmm.
the design in our mind's eye, like the very flamboyant.
Flamboyantly reserved. Outwardly flamboyant, but it's that somebody who shows
regal,
up to the party.
Very regal and just sort of conceited, but he deserves it.
It's that guy who shows up to a party dressed like a pink flamingo, but talks like he's just wearing slacks. I didn't see you there.
He's better than you.
Absolutely.
Is the idea, you know. And
thank you for recognizing that, Douglas.
Let's just think about what it was about the character that we liked, even when we didn't even have a backstory. We liked where he ended up. We liked where the story begins.
Mm-hmm.
He's in like a castle of some kind that he probably built, like a palace, and he's living large.
He's living large with his robot butler.
All things considered. Living in a wasteland, you know, there's not much to do.
Living large, thinking dark thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And very brooding.
So far, love his cohorts. Last episode, we talked about the robot butler.
Mm-hmm.
Robot
mm-hmm.
butler is absolutely staying. Nagel,
mm-hmm.
what can we do to take elements of the backstory that we have just spent quite a bit of time postulating?
I think the problem is that I don't think there's going to be any backstory that's as interesting as who Glampire is at the start of the story.
I mean, the thing is, we're going through all this now, so we, us here, feel like we can move forward.
Yeah.
That's the difference. How much of this we actually see on screen is all based on the kind of stories we end up wanting to tell. If there's ever a good reason for the Lightning Dogs to actually discover what happened, because the entire show is from the Lightning Dog's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So what they learn about Glampire is either what people tell them, and there's not going to be accurate representations of that, or what they learn.
Here's what we do know.
Uh-huh.
We know where Glampire begins.
Uh-huh.
As far as his backstory is concerned, we know he's been on Earth for a very long time.
Yep.
We know that he's familiar with humans and how humans work and the folly of man and blah, blah, blah.
We know that he likes crystals.
We know that he likes the crystals. We know that he most likely had a hand in the fall of man, whether that's by pushing them too far or going against them directly. That's still kind of hazy. We don't have to know that, I don't think. He does have an army now. Whether he had it before or whenever, that's still, we got
inconsequential.
That doesn't really matter as far as the Lightning Dogs are concerned, as far as we can start the story. And that he wants to go back home. His goal is he wants to grow the crystals
so that he can go back
slowly,
home.
Delicately, deliberately, so that he has the right stuff to finally make it back home. And it's a very delicate plan because now that mankind is gone, no one can build these machines anymore. Halloween Jack sure as fuck ain't gonna build them because he's, you know,
he can do is smash a spider on top of somebody's face.
Yeah, no one's a scientist on this planet anymore. you see what I'm saying?
Except like Queen Lich.
Except Queen Lich. Kind of, and Queen Lich doesn't give a shit.
I mean, obviously, the shadowy hand of the Glampire through Earth's history just so that we can have the Bowie references we want.
And it's okay to keep him mysterious for a while because I don't want to ruin anyone's views of like what they thought he really is bringing to the table.
No, absolutely. And then the idea that they do tap into something otherworldly. I like the idea that this character, Major Tom, sacrifices himself. And this was just something that I was sitting on a little bit. The idea that he sacrifices himself to contain this breach somehow. And that's one of the reasons he is what he is, because he is otherworldly. And I mean, it explains why it's trapped within the spacesuit. Maybe it was an experimental spacesuit that was designed specifically for whatever.
Yeah, the Space Boy was always going to be a late game addition anyway.
And just something that was hinted at and seen throughout that was terrifying. So we have that. We have the fact that he guided it to this point that broke. That caused a war of some kind. We don't need to necessarily know what kind of war. We just need to know how it ends with the crystals destroying the surface.
Imagine, if you will, the way that Glampire, as a business person, was going about creating this relay system for free energy for everyone was some design by which there were hubs all over the world. He co-financed them with different governments and so on. And then the channeling rod was a large crystal matrices in orbit.
Okay.
And this will tie in with something that I'm going to talk about much later in the episode, but I'll get to that in due time. Instead of having like one central power battery, some big accident that happens on the planet,
it's above the planet.
And involves an energy shockwave because it was already sending energy down all these places. It happens all over the world. And then, as one would suspect, in the wake of this global disaster, people start pointing blame at different people. Nuclear war immediately. They don't have anything to lose.
Even just war.
Yeah. Whatever kind of war. Big bad war, sudden global catastrophe.
Big bad shadow war.
And there's people who are to blame, chiefly, you know, whatever government, probably America, the Glampire was representing at the time.
I dig it. No, and especially I like the idea of just tying in with nuclear warfare. You don't detonate it on the ground because you lose half the payload. It goes right at, you know, just, and then you're only getting what goes up. You detonate it in the air.
All that aside, the biggest question that remains is, what is Halloween Jack? Where does he come from? Why does he work for Glampire?
Well, before we tackle that particular issue, let's go to the fans. After our last double dose of Lightning Dogs, we had an incredible fan response in the forums. So we got some shout-outs about Lightning Dogs from David Crane, who commented, he said, crazy idea. Lightning Dogs, the radio play, perhaps as part of a fundraiser? Further, imagine if the Protoman did the Lightning Dogs theme song.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. But
that's something. I'm just going to say, that's something I can get behind.
I'm going to say, David, you're a good egg. And
I like what you think.
Great minds, as they say, think alike. More later, more to come. You're on the right track.
Leave it at that for now.
And don't confuse this Australian accent for me auditioning for the role of Dingo.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing, pal.
It's just a thing.
Robert Stoneback said, here's for more Lightning Dogs. It may not be a show yet, but it's already a better cartoon than Road Rovers.
Nice.
That's unfortunate to say, but it's true.
And Simon Newell, who is a frequent fan artist for nerdy show related stuff.
New Roswell.
Is that his name on Trench and Tony live streaming?
That is.
Okay, well, Simon, he sent us a ton of awesome fan art and some letters to go along with it. He says, it's been a while since I did more nerdy show related artwork. As Trench and Tony will tell you, I have an unhealthy obsession with Lightning Dogs, and I berate them about it on the live stream at every opportunity ad nauseum. I really like Captain Scrap and Halloween Jack. Neither had many sketches. I sketched them both up. And you can see all this fan art at lightningdogs.com. There's a link at the bottom that says fan art. Do it to it. Went on to give some thoughts to Jack's weapons. Since he's going to fight the team outside of vehicles as well as in them, all my ideas were pretty close to Hobgoblin's weapons. Also, of course, he has Halloween in his name. I also like the pun Jackhammer, so I threw in some designs for Halloween sledgehammers.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
Yeah.
I am so entirely on board with that I am appropriating them.
Yeah, it's pretty good, Simon. It's pretty good, man. It's really, really good. we should have thought of it. I caught myself thinking about Halloween Jack and his minions. Previously, the name Halloween Abortions was used to describe them, which I didn't expect us to keep. It was a joke
And I know, but we had no point of reference before, but now we do. It's not going to be the real name. Definitely not going to be the real name.
Yeah, definitely not.
But until we find that out.
It was such a perfect embodiment, though, of what they were.
Right.
It conjures exactly the right mental image.
I'm not sure if this is any good, but seeing as his gang might need a name, I thought it might be fitting for it to be Halloween Jack and his skeleton crew.
That's not bad. It's got a ring to it.
I thought it kept well with both the punk-opalypse and Halloween vibe that Jack is described as having. And yeah, it does. So please use skeleton crew or any of the other ridiculous I come up with. I consider it closer to an honor than anything else. He also suggested that Jack might need a second in command or two. Keeping with the Halloween theme, he came up with a homicidal mutant clown named Gutbuster. There's a sketch in the fan art. Obvious double meaning intended. And yes, Punchline was considered as an alternative.
I approve.
He's a scary clown with a bunch of bandages on his abdomen and a tentacle arm. Arm of tentacles, actually. He says the bandages are mostly out of his midsection, but I honestly thought something weird like a giant mouth or another massive tendrils could be underneath it. Then again, I only gave him the tentacle originally because I couldn't draw his other arm for some reason.
That's how most good art is born.
Accidents, yeah. It's all good.
Does Jack need another subordinate? A witch or warlock, perhaps? As we've already got liches, glampires, and werewolves would be redundant. Maybe a scheming manipulator like Tarantulas or Starscream? Other than that, more love to the villains or non-team members. Did a sketch of the Japanese ninja cats. While picking a cat to draw, I thought of the name Tiger Lily and went with it. She's one of my favorite sketches so far, particularly because I never found it easy to draw female characters. Howl Noise, Simon Newell.
Howl Noise. Good, I like it.
Simon, man, you knocked it out of the park with those. And to anybody else who wants to submit fan art, info@nerdyshow.com is where you should go. Man, we got to... Simon, those are good ideas. Those are really good ideas, man. We'll talk.
Obviously, we love Halloween Jack's Halloween theme with these other freaks and creatures and everything like that. I don't want to mess with that too much because it's such a strong visual and, dare I say, it's getting more unique the more we talk about it.
Right.
But the one thing that I really liked in my headcanon that I liked for Halloween Jack was that he looked less human and more space orc, space goblin. Something that kind of mixed an old and new vibe, whereas his costume, his attitude is all Halloween, but in terms of like when you look at him, he doesn't look like a Halloween abortion himself. He's more of like a pointy-eared, I don't want to riff on the Hobgoblin Spider-Man thing so much, but right. Is something a more old-fashioned orcish.
We have a very strong, unified mental image of what the Glampire is. I don't think...
Right.
We all see him pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
Halloween Jack, it sounds like we all have very different ideas.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy.
I picture him as almost this rockabilly dude with a pumpkin head. It was just a design that I was just dicking around with, and I've fallen in love with it because I love the idea.
Do you have a drawing?
I had a picture of it somewhere.
And I've been really into Halloween Jack as, again, rockabilly still, but like a rockabilly ghoul. He's got this like jack-o'-lantern sleeless jacket. Right. He's got suspenders.
I like the costume. It's just that when you get to his head, he just looks like a dude. The more creature he kind of gets, the more interested I become. Because if anything looks too much like a person, I'm immediately going to start thinking, well, where did he come from? Like, is he from Earth? Or like, what's his deal? Which is why we moved away from the ghoul thing in the first place.
Right.
Because we didn't want to suggest that they're all people.
And he's not particularly intelligent or even particularly special. He's just maybe better than most.
Right.
Because like we said in the previous episode, he's like Goldar from Power Rangers.
He is better than most, but not by much. But he treats it as if he's the chosen one. You know, like, he is the
leader.
I am
your lord and savior. Bow down before Halloween Jack. One of the reasons that I gravitate toward the design of the pumpkin-headed guy for Halloween Jack is just the contrast. It's a good visual, because you mentioned, you know, you don't want the body to lead up just to a dude's head.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this kind of lean, because I picture him tall. I picture him spindly.
Yeah.
Because he's got to stand out from a crowd.
And I'm on board. That sounds exactly like what I was going for, except for the pumpkin head.
But then you have that contrast, because it's just like, boom.
Now, you know what? If we can talk about splitting the difference, mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind him having a helmet that's like a fucking pumpkin.
Yeah. That he doesn't take off.
And when he does, he's a freak underneath.
Yeah. Then we see that he's nothing special.
Yeah.
That would be entertaining.
That could be interesting, yeah.
Yeah, because
why does he get to wear the big helmet? Shut up, I'm Halloween Jack. It's all right, yeah, boss. And then just fight, dunk.
You're just a fucking dude.
You're one of us. Whatever, I'm better than you.
No, I'm not. I got bigger tusks than you do.
Dude, you know what might be pretty interesting? If the Lightning Dogs ever beat Halloween Jack, whoever puts that helmet on is Halloween Jack. it's almost like there's always infighting among.
And there's always a Halloween Jack.
Yeah, there's always, there has to be a Halloween Jack in charge. These are the putties. So it's basically all the putties fighting for the number one spot on top of the, on top of an anthill. Glampire doesn't give a shit. He's just like, who's Halloween Jack? I mean, like, that's just the thing of, like, if we need to do that.
While you boys have been fighting over who gets to wear the helmet, I've been sketching up some alternative head improvements. Try that on for size. I gave him these, like, little squishy mandible things, like no upper lip, kind of scrunched in nose, hobgoblin-y sort of ears. Still
keeping
got
the rockabilly hair.
Yeah.
The thing about the hair is I feel like it's just too human, though. Like, I get it. Like, I get,
that's,
I, you
but
know,
that's
the thing.
World we no, created, here's Doug. The thing. That's the thing.
Doug, we'll split the difference. It's a wig.
It's not a wig.
No, it's not a wig.
All right.
Wait, that's too silly. It's like, oh, my wig. It's like it's going to fly off in battle. It's gonna, I can't do it without my wig. Oh no.
I'm not seeing a problem there. I like that direction for the face because, again, I like, just based on what we've been discussing, I like the idea that the helmet ties in.
Again, the question, what is he? Is he one of the freaks that just grew out of the earth?
Yeah.
Or is he something that Glampire created, or is this something that he brought in?
He's just one of the myriad.
He's the first of the freaks.
Well, I mean, they don't have a long lifespan. He's far from the first, but he's one of the myriad genetic cesspool creatures, one of the peopleoids. They're just out there.
He happens to be the tallest.
And he's the one who started, you know, running his own gang, and next Glampire's like, well, you're running a gang for me now. He's one of several generals. He's the one who's cleaning up the streets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's like the sheriff of Nottingham.
Like, we all agree on what his role is. It's just a matter now of coming down to design and origin.
Which origin, we don't need to spend too much time thinking about that. We really don't.
I just want to be
Halloween
able to...
Jack 2 is, right. is far more interesting is where he starts.
Right. I just want to be able to look at him and not wonder...
Where
did
he come from?
Well, yeah, because the point is that there's supposed to be no people. And if we look at something that looks too much like a person, it's like, well, wait, where are the rest?
Well, I've always envisioned that these were people, that all these creatures, all these spider folk and all, you know, everything else, they're people, they have feelings, they grow weird roots out of the ground, they drink stinky water. It's
stinky water,
which is normal water for them, but for anybody else, it's
right,
stinky.
Right.
You know,
right.
They're
sitting there, the dog show up. Oh, God.
But like it's clear to lightning dogs or any other force that would come down to earth. You can't look at this and think this is a group of people. This is like a mother bears a child that is not at all what the mother looks like. And maybe
right.
she doesn't bear it. It hatches from a clutch of eggs.
Well, that's the thing. Like when Tony did the first Halloween abortion sketches, these were like monsters,
mm-hmm.
like straight up monsters.
Here's where I've been going to about these creatures since day one.
Since
Masters
day one.
Of the universe. Every fucking thing that Skeletor threw at He-Man was a different freaky motherfucker
right.
with no background whatsoever.
Yep.
They were just there. And that's what these guys are. That's always what they've been to me, is that these are the people who populate the earth now. Some of them might be more or less glorified bipedal animals. Some of them might actually be living together and feeling something that looks like love.
Right.
Are they hugging or are they fucking? I can't tell.
Well, that's the thing that I still get. The one thing is when we're talking design-wise for Halloween Jack.
Right.
If he looks too much like a dude, I start to ask too many questions
sure.
that we don't have answers for.
Well, Tony and I can hash out however many Halloween Jack sketches all the live
right.
long day. We'll pick one that works.
Right.
We know his role. We know who he is as a character. If his look seems too genuinely distracting for him to look humanish, then we have a problem. But we still want him to look cool. Like, that's all
yeah.
been the whole point. We just want everybody to look cool.
I'm even down with, like, because we talked about costumes and weapons, like, all that. Like, I'm cool with all
right,
that.
Right, and the best way mm-hmm. to make costumes and weapons work is for him to have at least something resembling a human existence.
Yeah. And I agree. I still think Halloween Jack needs to be bipedal, one head, two arms.
Right.
It's just as long as he's not, like, a guy who fell into a pile of acid and then came back up and now he's just keeps walking. Like, if you get these mandibles on him, if these are, like, straight-up spider mandibles... Where it's like, oh, wait, his ancestor was a spider, not a person. But much like how the dogs eventually grew up to look more like people, this guy does.
I feel that human genetics are a part of the soup that these things are coming from.
Yeah.
It's maybe even a key ingredient. But, you know, yeah, not exclusively. To mention something that I did that's helped inspire a lot of recent developments for at least my take on The Wasteland, which we'll be putting to the chopping block here to see how it goes down,
mm-hmm.
which is that I was in Chicago recently and I was fortunate enough to get to see the David Bowie Is touring exhibit. It was originally at the Victoria and Albert Museum in England last year, and now it's touring the world with only one U.S. destination, and that was Chicago. It's an incredible, incredible, incredible presentation that I could go on and on about. You see the suit that he wore on the cover of Ziggy Stardust, every outfit you ever wanted to see. You want a crystal from Labyrinth with a special little stand for it that was made by the Henson shop. They got everything there. It was incredible. Among the things that they had there, among the very mind-bending, incredible things that they had at this place, was an animatic built from storyboards David Bowie himself drew for a film he never got to make called Hunger City, which was being developed around the same time of all the various projects that turned into the album Diamond Dogs. There was a couple things he was trying to do. One, he wanted to create a musical version of 1984, but the Orwell estate said no. And the other thing was this story about Hunger City, where Halloween Jack was the protagonist, and he and the Peopleoids roller skated through this dystopian wasteland based on the underworld from Fritz Lang's Metropolis. Just kind of general purpose dystopian story. I don't know where he was going with it, but there's this opening sequence that was animated. There's lots of sketches from it in the book that was made based on the exhibit, which Doug and Tony are looking at right now. It's interesting to see this thing, Hunger City, Peopleoids, and a version of Halloween Jack that actually speaks to a lot of the things that we were sort of looking for when we initially created the idea of Lightning Dogs and jokingly threw in Diamond Dogs and Halloween Jack and all that business. Like, here is the post-apocalyptic world visually realized in a lot of sense. And this is not exactly what we were going for precisely, but as far as like misshapen buildings and squalor and all that, it does speak to maybe where these creatures would live. It also speaks to a lot of the science fiction that David Bowie was reading in the 1970s. It mentions specifically, and I think this might be something that we should all probably read this stuff at some point, Harlan Ellison's A Boy and His Dog, which is one of the books that was very influential to the creation of Fallout, as well as the film based on it. William Burroughs' The Wild Boys, A Book of the Dead, which I've never read, but Burroughs is really cool. And this movie called The Omega Man, which is Charlton Heston believing he's the last man in the world, being all survivalist, and then fighting what looks like maybe vampires.
It's kind of like, it's a precursor to I Am Legend.
Yeah, it's based off the same short story.
Okay, that explains it, because I was looking at it, and I was like, this seems a lot like I Am Legend, you guys.
It was definitely based on the same thing.
One of the other things that inspired the Peopleoids was Bowie reading stories about Victorian urchins having lived on roofs and hidden in urban environments, which I think, if we pursue that kind of like look and feel for these urban environments, for the Peopleoids, for lack of a better term, other than Halloween abortions, of course. we could see Halloween Jack as kind of an evil post-apocalyptic Peter Pan in a certain way.
Who's the guy from Oliver Twist who was in charge of the kids?
Fagin,
yeah. He's like a freak Fagin.
Yeah, but I suppose with more for the sake of charming the freaks and so on, Fagin, not a charismatic guy.
Right,
Halloween
right.
Jack, yeah. A little bit more like...
Gives him purpose.
Hey, come fly with me, Spider Mama. You know, like
yeah. He's like the rock. He's like a rockabilly Bin Laden of the freak world.
Rockabin Laden.
why is that in existence now?
It's your fault.
You, sir.
I didn't say Rockabin.
No, you just
now.
You set it up.
You pretty much
you
said
set
that.
It up. Yeah. You said.
I set it up, Tony knocked it down.
Bin Laden?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You put some chocolate in my peanut butter.
I'm so sorry.
You should be.
That is not a character. Waka Bin Laden will not be a character.
One other point of reference, not for Bowie, but featuring Bowie, that could be highly influential, but we haven't yet watched it, is the 1980s film The Hunger, where he does play a vampire.
That's right. I forgot. Yeah, yeah.
So the world of the wasteland, David Bowie and all that stuff, there's lots of little things floating around, more influences from Bowie. And again, I'm a huge David Bowie fan. So
no.
I'm all about the I'm all about
since when
incorporating as much of this Bowie stuff as possible. But also, I don't want to make David Bowie the cartoon. You know?
No. Like, yeah. Well, I think I figured out what my problem was with making Halloween Jack look like a human and trying to incorporate the influence of like Hunger City, but not that.
Right.
If we have any bad guys, especially if they're Peopleoids. Now, not just the name, but just the idea of things that maybe were people at some point. I think that might be getting a little dark, where our heroes are the Lightning Dogs, and they're fighting things that I would pity. But if I pity them too much, I start to think, do they have to fight? And suddenly I start getting conflicted. Whereas if they're straight up monsters, that's why when we're talking about the Halloween abortion, spider people, Cyclops people, and if they stumble across a village of a few of them, they're going to get ready to fight, but then you, the audience, go, whoa, 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 whoa. They're not fighting. They're, like, scared of the Lightning Dogs. They're, like, huddling around a campfire and huddling into a mud hut. Suddenly so you're then, like, wait a minute, what the hell, like, what?
Well, that gives the Lightning Dogs something more to fight for, because right. they realize that, you know, these are people, and that maybe Glampire's rule is cruel.
Right.
Know?
But up until that point, if they're looking too much like people, I'm going to be like, I don't know how I feel about this. It's not like when you watch Star Wars Rebels, and they kill a couple stormtroopers, because they're faceless, but they're also loyal to an evil empire. You didn't have to join the empire, you could have joined the rebellion. There's, you know, it's a little bit more basic. But when you're on a planet where you got an evil Glampire, if you'd suddenly drop me through a portal and I'm on the wasteland, I'd probably work for Glampire. Not because I think he's got great ideas, but because he's probably the only guy who's got food.
Right.
So I think that that line of thinking, it gets a little dark for something that's like Lightning Dogs, where it's like, no, we like Glampire. Like, we like kicking ass. You know, like, we like being mean. So if you have Halloween Jack and his guys going around roughing up some of the freaks, being like, hey, you know, why don't you give us some of your crystals that you've been growing? Come on, cough up the crystals, and then we give you the food or whatever. You can then join the Lightning Dogs. You can see why Lightning Dogs got to intervene and save these things that are even freaks. Right. This was going to lead into a goal that the Lightning Dogs have more than just, we got to get home. If everybody just got to get home, everyone's got to get home. Lightning Dogs are trying to build a way to get rebuild a Farfetch'd to go back home. At the same time, they know they can't go until Glampire is defeated. We have them meeting all of these people. We have them meeting the plant guy, which I created a name for, which I'll get to when we give it, if we talk about him. We got to meet plant guy, robots, Queen Lich, ninja cats, all of these different beings, Captain Scrap. What if their goal is to overthrow Glampire and they say, we can't do this unless we get some help? We got to go and talk to the robots. We got to go and talk to Queen Lich. We got to convince these people that Glampire's bad. We're the good guys, and no one's going to be free until Glampire is gone. And then it becomes them trying to get people to work together to overthrow Glampire. Some of them are going to volunteer. Some of them are going to fight for Glampire. And this could ultimately lead to the big battle, the big siege of
the
Glampire's
five armies. Trademark yeah. Lightning Dogs?
Yeah, yeah. Trademark Lightning Dogs.
Not quite.
But the battle, it would be a big battle. Glampire right. and the people who remain loyal to him and the Lightning Dogs and the people who they were able to sway to work for them. So you'd get things like the plant guy, you'd get the robots, because the robots sure as shit don't like Glampire. But on Glampire's side, you'd have Halloween Jack, his minions, but maybe on the Lightning Dog side, you got some of the freaks that used to work for Glampire. And the ninja cats are probably ninja cats might work for Glampire. Samurai cats probably work for Lightning Dogs. So you could see the mythology growing and moving to a point of conflict that could right. be a really interesting dramatic point, especially if they're like, look, we're on this planet. We can't do it by ourselves. But it seems more heroic to be like, not only are we going home, but we're erasing the bad thing that was here before, thereby being loyal to Earth, loyal to the masters, clean up the mess that the humans couldn't do, even though the humans are long gone.
What you passing around, Tony? Some Halloween Jack drawings?
Tony, you draw so well. I didn't know you could draw. I thought you played video games.
Funny you should say that. Trench and Tony, streaming weekly over at Trench and Tony.
Tony's drawings here, the thing that sold me. Because this, you could be like, Doug, that still looks kind of like a guy. But it's different enough because you got the pointy ears.
Mm-hmm.
You got the spider mandibles. You got kind of almost like a Voldemort nose. And you got these wide eyes. And I'm like, I'm sated. To me, that's different enough to be like, all right, well, that's not a person.
Okay.
So that's does that make sense?
Yeah,
like I just found it's
so very along with along line of what I drew to yeah. appease your desires as it was
because
so.
It was because mm-hmm. I realized just, I was it was very hard for me to explain the nuance of like the line between human and monster. If you make him too much of a monster, then the rockabilly thing's out the window. Tony's design skills once again saved the day. The only thing I would say is maybe sharp teeth. You think about sharp teeth or regular teeth?
Oh, I'm thinking that you never actually see his teeth.
Well, he's got a smile every now and then. He's Halloween Jack.
They would be sharp. They would be anime sharp when you see it, like...
Because he's, yeah, spidery, monstery.
Mm-hmm. No, and I went... It was less spider and actually more ant. An ant mandible.
That's those, fucking like, cool, too. Ants, yeah. Ant's good, too.
Because it was just something that we could do with his jaw.
Dude, even if he doesn't have white eyes, then give him the fucking ant eyes.
Think the
is that too
white...
much?
Too much.
Too much?
Not, and we'll have
other... Then he is, well, yeah, you're right, because then he is just a giant fucking ant.
He's a bug.
he's just a giant bug
honestly,
at that point.
The ant was something that I was kind of tying into, because yeah. he's the head of this army. So a lot of kind of non-thinking...
Getting psychological there.
It's a lot of people who are weak by themselves, but as a group...
I think we got to be careful to not dip too much into the insect bag for Halloween Jack.
No, you're right.
It runs contrary to everything we built with him.
No, it's just, I think, I just
the inspiration
that and
of
just
it.
The genesis of why ant mandibles.
I still think he needs to be green or a skin. He's not an exoskeleton.
Orange.
He's not a, I don't want to look at him and think ant.
He can't be orange because the color palette of the wasteland itself will
it's
likely
kind of
be orange.
Deserty.
Red,
true
and
enough.
So on.
We're going in a good direction. I'm happy. I'm happy with the direction this is going in.
Yeah, we might even be able to create a mandible that's not distinctly insect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Something weird. It's super weird.
I want it to be a hard mandible, because if it's like jowly, then we get into Zoidberg territory. You don't want that. Why not?
Oh, what is that lightning dog?
You keep throwing your trash out, Glampire.
Perhaps I keep reading it.
Perhaps you could throw out a sandwich?
Seems like a fair enough stopping point to then jump into the next Lightning Dogs episode. Only a week away. We're sorry, guys. We're super sorry. To make you wait.
We can't contain it.
That the world would not be ready for an episode as large as both these episodes mashed together. Come on.
You can't keep this lightning in a bottle.
But, next week, we'll be finishing our discussion. We'll be wrapping up our preliminary concepts for the Lightning Dogs universe. And then we'll let you know what comes next. Of course, this conversation is far from over. Talk to us on the forums. Let us know what you think about what we've said in this episode so far, and then we'll keep that conversation going. Before we go, we got to give some shout-outs to the awesome people who supported the Nerdy Show Network, and in turn, the cause for Lightning Dogs.
Hey, that rhymed, Cap.
These fine people that we're about to list off are Lightning Dogs in their own right.
Aru.
They are supporting us for $10 or more on Patreon. Because the entire Nerdy Show Network is funded via fans. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to subscribe via Patreon, where you get access to early releases and all kinds of bonus content. And then these guys, they get a shout out every single month. So you know their name and you know how hard they're repping Nerdy Show.
What?
Steven Pingel.
Caitlin Kruger.
Sage Zero.
Steven Peckham, or Peckham, I guess, maybe. I prefer Peckham.
Kay Alice.
Red Ion.
Mannypedia.
Jeffrey Voss.
Matthew Cox.
Sean T. Red.
I'm glad you included that extra D in there.
I gotta make sure.
Moran.
Kurt Fortenberry.
Chief of Stuff. It's all one word.
Dr. Talos.
Eric Maxiner.
Joshua Westfall.
Brian Shulman.
Kevin Wise.
Sean Lawlor.
Temsu.
Garrier.
David Van Pelt.
And Ice Abyss.
They're joined by their new brethren, recent patron, Evan Thompson. But that's not the only support that has been bequeathed unto us. Even though Caitlin Kruger is now a Patreon backer, she and her brother Ethan have a little game they play with one-time donations where they donate back and forth. And
girl.
and create sort of a dialogue. And this time, over the course of $30... they have created this narrative between Black Pepper Jack and Galdap from Dungeons and Doritos.
Oh, God, have mercy.
Which I'm going to attempt to read now. We'll see how it goes. The undead are coming. Nothing can change that. What do I have to fear?
Dungeons and Doritos, it's what we call on our show. Doritadonia's greatest warriors. That sort of thing.
Yes, I've met them.
Yeah, it takes a while to get any traction, but let's do a head count here. We've got a mistress of the steam tunnels, a mountain Goliath whose past haunts his enemies, a half-orc with breathtaking insanity issues, a couple of master sword slingers, and you, big fella, you've managed to piss off every single one of them.
I have an army.
We have a wolf bear.
So thank you, Caitlin and Ethan. You guys never cease to amaze, and you all never cease to amaze with your kind contributions. We're very, very close to making our next milestone, which is $700 monthly, and that means that we can actually afford a small payout to each of the shows on the Nerdy Show Network. That means all of our contributing programming, like Bits, Rhymes, and Life, Epic Podcast, Wicked Anime, all those guys, they will get something monthly from you, and that means they can either like put it towards convention fees, food during recordings. They're currently getting nothing for doing their show, and they will actually be receiving something thanks to you guys. Beyond that, our next milestone at 1,000 will afford us the ability to actually produce more shows, including State of the Empire on a regular schedule, Nerdy Show Book Club on a regular schedule.
Pokeballs of Steelix, don't forget that.
Yeah, on a regular schedule, Pokeballs of Steelix, our Pokemon role-playing show, will return.
That's where I'm on, Marty.
As of this recording, we're at 666. Number of the Beast. So,
Ronnie James Dio, when did you get in here?
I do cocaine.
Now you're Roxo.
So yes, thank you guys. It's been a good time. We paused on 616, the Marvel Universe, and now we're at 666.
Which is good because the Marvel Universe is dying. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, it's no longer going to be 616 because apparently like 666, 616 are kind of the same thing. And that was Alan Moore's joke on Marvel that he designated the core universe as the devil. So
that sly bastard.
I know. So now Marvel's like, oh, we finally get the joke. Okay, we're going to change that.
Well played, crazy McHomeless Beard.
After Secret War, you can expect to see 616 take a hike and fuse into something new, maybe a new number. Maybe they're just going to throw out the whole system. I don't know.
Oh, you know what this means? We're going to get a new Adam Warrock rap about it.
Probably. Several.
I'm okay with that. Adam, keep doing what you do.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make a song about New Quack City.
I want to make a song about lightning dogs.
We'll more on that later. We'll see if we can pull that off. Probably. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Lightning Dogs. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Tony.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Metafiction and fictional characters stretch beyond space and time, so best you be prepared for the duck. It's been everywhere and nowhere at once. Another private dick who wants to eat his lunch in private now. Travel through space and time, it's how he's changed history. You want Howard as president? Then write it down. Walt Disney with his frozen head?
Be quiet now.
Howard wears pants while other ducks they can't compare. Dr. Strange and Truman Capote. You ain't getting the joke, there ain't a joke, see? Well, he's a duck, he's from space, now he's here and he's a dick. Yeah, you might have seen the movie, cause that image kinda sticks with ya. Big picture, Howard's got it covered. Birds of a feather flock together, now we're here in the 616 in space and on Earth. Howard the Duck was there first. What?
Trips to the world that he never made. Just a duck from outer space. In a world gone mad, need some common sense now. Howard the Duck showed you how. Trips to the world that he never made. Just a duck from outer space. In a world gone mad, need some common sense now. Howard the Duck showed you how.
Trapped in a world that he never made. Just a duck from outer space. In a world gone mad, need some common sense now. Let Howard the Duck show you how.
Feathers ruffled, Howard's in a foul mood. Bad dudes, they better step down too. She-Hulk, can't stand
Spider-Man,
it. Can't deal with it.
Police, they can't hang with the Duck's real business. In space, Howard can be there in the blink of an eye. As the Guardians of the Galaxy swing by. Peter Quill, Rocket, and Groot, they gotta respect the foul gum shoes. Some do remember back in the day, I was a Marvel zombie. Didn't bother with Batman, didn't bother with Archie. This one's here for all the characters we love. And began called classics while everyone just shrugs. So if you're trapped in a world you never made, and if you're feeling kinda grumpy today, maybe you would get Howard in the same kinda way. He's a duck, he's from space, nothing more to say.
Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes or like and follow us on SoundCloud. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. You can also subscribe to us via iTunes and SoundCloud. Leave a comment, like and share, and follow Nerdy Show on all of your favorite social networks. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
Their forces combined form lightning dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
I'm not gonna do that every time we
judgmental over there.